First on Radio 4, we go to the Cotswolds in the company of Matt Baker for Open Country with Bells On.
Oh, here we go. Lovely. And back we go. And forwards. The image of a traditional English village is of cycling vicars, cricket and tea, warm beer and Morris men dancing on the green. Well, this may well be a stereotype, but here in Chip and Camden, I tell you, oh, Morris dancing is truly alive and kicking.
That is great. You see, you've got a lot of young lads in there giving it plenty of passion and lust. What we have here is dances that are unique and traditional to the town of Chipping Camden. You can go anywhere in the country and you won't see anybody else dance like we do.
Well, it's not very often you get to say to somebody's face that you are a fool, but I am here with Tim Sexton, who is the fool for Chipping Camden Morrisman.
The fool is... Well, traditionally he was always the best dancer.
Great.
That doesn't necessarily mean I am. He has to know what's going on. He forms a link between the dancers and the audience.
You have an unbroken tradition. What exactly does that mean? Does that mean that you've been dancing forever?
No. Unbroken doesn't mean it was danced continuously. We were quite good at going off to war, so of course that would take the men away. Although the dance form may have lapsed for a period of time, there was always an old dancer or musician who was able to show the new people who were starting again how the steps went. Abingdon, Bampton, Headington Quarry and Chipping Camden, that's the acknowledged four traditional sides with the unbroken tradition.
So all the other groups that people might see at fairs and what have you around England, around Britain, are they revival groups then? Or?
Certainly there was a great revival in the 60s and 70s with the great folk revival of that period. A lot of these sides sprung up from the folk clubs and they would take a tradition that may have died out because, you know, there's certain examples of traditions that are documented but there's no standing side. And sometimes now when they elect a new squire, which is the boss, that chap will say, well, I fancy doing that tradition. So through the winter, we'll practice half a dozen dances from that tradition. And when we go out next year, that's what we'll do as part of our performance.
We are getting closer and closer with every step to what I'm sure is going to be a phenomenal view. It looks like it drops away.
It does.
And the view is getting bigger and bigger.
Well, you're right on the northern edge of the Cotswold Hills. I've brought you to Dover's Hill, just outside Chipping Camden.
It's like we're standing on the edge of a bowl and looking down into it, and the treetops are well below us.
I think they say you can see about five counties from here, but you can see right across to the Welsh Hills on a really good day.
Goodness.
You've got the Malvern.
It feels rugged, doesn't it? It's
lovely. You've got the Malvern Hills across there.
Right, that's off to our left then. Just
off to your left, The one with the flat top is Meon Hill. That's an ancient hill fort on top of there. And Stratford-on-Avon's the other side of that in the far distance.
It seems to be spotless as well today, because we've got patchy sunlight, which is lighting up parts of the view. You know, lots of ploughed fields in the middle. It's pretty quiet today, but I understand this place is raucous, isn't it? What, the Cotswold Olympics? Tell me more, Tim.
The Cotswold Olympics, yes. 1612 is the first recorded event. Captain Robert Dover was the chap who actually organised it.
Right here, at Dover's Hill, then.
At Dover's Hill, where we are now, exactly where we are now. You see, what we have here is almost like a natural amphitheatre.
I suppose, yeah.
Because when the games are in progress, on the flat section on the top here, we have backsword fighting. There'll be arenas here for the marching
sword
bands.
Sword fighting?
Backsword fighting.
What's backsword fighting?
Backsword fighting. I'm not an expert, but backsword fighting is an old form of fighting where you fought with two swords. And then the games take part down here. And it's things, for example, like the shin kicking.
With no shin pads, I'm guessing.
Well, no. Traditionally, they used to stuff hay up the trouser legs. In actual fact, the shin kicking is like a wrestling match. Because basically, the two men grab hold of the shoulders and then they try to knock the foot out.
Oh, I'm
so the person falls over.
So, Tim, is the Cotswold Olympics, is that kind of the main event for the Morris Group in the year?
No, our special day is the following day, what we call Scuttlebrook Wake. And that is a celebration which is originally the Whitsun Flower Festival, which is where the May Queen is paraded through the town pulled by the Morris men. And then there's maple dancing, and then we finish off the day's events with St Morris. And people who've been away all year or been away for 3 or 4 years, well, they'll always come back for the Scuttlebrook Wake, the Dover's Games of Scuttlebrook, because it's like a huge reunion for Camden.
I'm Paddy Sexton and I'm 22. I'm a trainee history teacher. We're proud of where we come from, we love the area, and I think we're all quite pleased to keep something going that's uniquely Camden. And it's a very English tradition, and I think in this sort of modern age where we like to laugh a little bit at ourselves in this country, it's important to try and hold on to those things.
Jonathan, can we borrow you? Come over here with your outfit.
And can you just give us a quick rundown, Tim, of what Jonathan's wearing? Because he's all in white.
Basic white shirt, white trousers.
Why? Why is it traditionally white?
The theory is white is to demonstrate purity. So around his neck we have a red handkerchief. On his chest, front, left and right, we have a rosette in our colours of green, yellow and red.
Okay, we'll turn you around at this point, yeah. Because...
repeated on the back, two more rosettes in green, yellow and red.
Super, excellent. Okay. And at the very bottom, on the
at
old
the very
shins
bottom,
there.
On the old shins, we've got the bell pads, which have a series of bells and ribbons and streamers in our colours of red, yellow and green.
OK, this is a stick dance called Dover's Backsword. And the basic move, it's hits above one,
below two,
two. Yeah, three, up, four, down. One, up, two, three, four. OK, and that's kind of like the chorus in the dance.
Right.
And in between each of those sort of parts, there's sort of different dance moves. So one of them, which you'll see each individual pair do, is turn on the spot, OK? So you need to clasp your sort of fists together, keep the stick straight up in the air,
yep.
And then turn. It's a double turn, so you end up on the opposite side.
Oh, yes,
the one
we did.
OK?
Yep.
So now on that side. We'll do that last half of the front two pairs, essentially.
Right, okay. And this sort of skipping bit in the middle?
We don't call it skipping.
Sorry.
It's the bicycle step, and yes, yeah. It's a hop and a flick of your at the end of your toe. That's it. Yeah, you got it. You've got it, exactly. Yeah. Actually. That's pretty good.
Okay.
And the rest of it you'll just pick up as we're doing the dance.
There used to be a lot of competition in the 19th century for Morris dancing because it was quite prestigious to be a Morris dancer, even though it was based in the agricultural population. You could often earn more as a Morris dancer than you could as an agricultural labourer.
Really?
So when they would take time off to go to these events, which they would walk to, sleep in the hedge, dance, get a little bit merry, sleep in the hedge and walk back the next day.
Or they would get the hat out, you know, and go around and collect.
Yeah, they would collect.
Where did it come from?
Its origins are pagan, and they go back to times when people would worship the woods and the trees and the fields. They had hard winters. When the sun came out and it started to get warm again, the crops were starting to grow, and of course that would make everybody feel tremendously happy. If you go through all the cultures in the world, there are always examples of men dancing to celebrate renewal.
And what happened to Morris dancing after the pagan times? Because there doesn't seem to be many written records.
No, well, historically, a lot of the people who used it couldn't read or write. It was traditionally handed down from father to son. But as it evolved through the centuries, I mean, after the pagans, you've got the Romans, and then you move on to the Norman invasion. And obviously when the Normans came over with their style of courtly dancing, that would have had an impact. You move on to the Crusades. When the Crusaders came back from fighting the Moors, I mean, a lot of people assign the word Moorish to the term Morris. That's another common theory for where the name came from. Nobody knows. It's just a theory like people like to bandy about. So there's very little written record going back beyond the 1800s. I mean, from Camden's point of view, we've got a couple. We've got 1772 and the infamous murder.
Oh, what?
William Keeley was teaching Morris on Fish Hill, which is just across to our left-hand side over there. He saw someone else with some money. Anyway, he followed the chap home and hit him on the head with a hedge post and killed him and stole, I think it was about 20 quid, which was quite a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was found, convicted and hanged. He was known as the infamous Maurice dancer.
Well, it's a bitter cold day in Chipping Camden. And of course,
come into the shelter of the old silk mill. And I'm here to find out about the craft movement which came to Chip and Camden in the early 1900s. And I am looking for David Harve, who is a silversmith. And here's his room at the top of the wooden stairs. Goodness me. This looks like something that should be in a period drama. There's a blowtorch that's flaming away on the workstation just in front of me, and there's wheels and vices and clamps and files. Honestly, this is quite something.
It hasn't changed in the last 100 years, really. Yeah. Certainly hasn't in the last 50 years since I've been working here, anyway.
What sort of stuff do you make in here, then?
Private commissions, and you make anything from thimbles, spoons, up through to teapots, coffee pots, candelabras, through chalices, church pieces, you name it, we'll make it in silver.
So this is something then that was started many years ago, back with the craft movement. So David, who was C.R. Ashby and what exactly is the Guild of Handicraft?
C.R. Ashby went into architect practice in London, and then he got friendly with William Morris, which was part of the Arts and Craftsmen.
Yeah.
Morris had got Ashby designing stuff in craftwork, silver, wood and that, and they got nobody to make them. So in 1888, Ashby then set up these workshops in the Mile End Road of London to make the things he was designing. So and then they moved to Camden. Ashby wanted to be somewhere within close proximity to London, but wherever he found suitable workshops, there was never the houses to house all the workers. And the guild at the turn of the century was made into a limited company. And one of the directors of the guild was a man named Holland Martin. And the Holland Martin family actually owned the village of Overbury, which is the other side of Broadway, about 5 miles away. And Holland Martin came through Camden one day. And of course, the first thing that struck him was all the empty houses where the wool trade had gone. And he met somebody in the street and said, is there any building suitable for workshop? And this old mill was lying empty, and that was it.
So they moved here, and
yeah, Grandad came then as one of his workers. And Ashby actually, I mean, with his romantic ideas, because that was his idea of moving in, out into the country and the growing of the East End sort of thing, probably wasn't the best of businessmen. Then by 1908, he had to go into voluntary liquidation. At that stage, individual craftsmen took on the workshop, and Grandad took on the silversmith shop. Okay. Families literally worked here ever since.
And how did your connection with the Morris dancers start then?
Just done my 50 years of dance. Dad started it. One of his best pals when he was a youth was Lionel Ellis, and it was the Ellis family that run the Morris dancers, so he got Dad dancing, and they, I think Dad started about 1928.
Now, is this your son who's filing away in the background?
He is, yeah.
Right. Would you be tempted?
No.
Yeah, carry on filing. I'm halfway along Chipping Camden's very impressive high street. All the buildings here are made of that honey-coloured Cotswold stone, but there's a real mixture of properties. Some are very small, quaint cottages with grey slate roofs. Others are three-storey townhouses with big, tall windows and pointed roofs that bear down onto the road. And I am on the search for the Eight Bells pub, which is the oldest surviving pub here. And I'm off to quench my thirst.
My father-in-law was a basket maker. In an agricultural area, baskets were very important. They used to make what they called pot hampers for vegetables, and another type of round basket, which they called a sieve, which was used for apples and fruit.
Dorrie Ellis married into a family that had had a long association with the tradition of Morris dancing. And did they all dance then, all the workers? Were they all?
The workers down there, the Hathaway family, were a very musical family, concertinas and fiddles. So they had a tradition in the family of Morris dancing. And the Ellises, of which my husband was one, was a family of boys. There was six of them. A couple of them went off to Canada, but those that were left got interested and involved with the Morris dancing.
Dorrie, when did you marry Lionel?
Well, we were married in 1939, beginning of the war. So, of course, as regards the dancing, it lapsed during the war.
But I hear a rumour that the ladies took on the baton, if you like, for a little while.
Well, they did.
Were you involved
in that? There was great opposition to that from the men, and I agreed with the men. I mean, Morris dancing is essentially, traditionally, a men's pastime. And let the girls stick to country dancing. But because there were so many of the local men in the forces, there was a girls' team, but thankfully it didn't last.
So how do you feel now, knowing that the group is still there, it's still strong? I mean, you must be quite proud of that.
I guess I am.
Hello, my darling.
She'll just come out.
She's a beauty.
I'll take her down there. She went home.
Oh, we've got a little piglet as well. Come on, you lot.
And what breed is she?
Berkshire.
Right.
Rare breed. Yeah, so at the moment, I'm president of the Berkshire Pig Breeders Club.
They are a fantastic pig. I mean, a big black pig.
They've got prick ears, so they see what's happening, and they're not caught by surprise, so they don't sort of go...
She's got a great face
bolting
on
off anywhere.
Here she comes now up to us, because you've got the bucket full
very,
of feed there.
They're very intelligent.
She's got this lovely big jaw. That
they know where the food is.
And a little white flash down the nose. A Mile Out with Chipping Camden is David and Carol Webb's small holding, and I've arrived just in time to give David a hand feeding the pigs. Shall we open
it up? You don't mind. We had breed champion for, I think it was 4 years running at the Three Counties show at Malvern, and 3 years running at the Royal Show, but foot and mouth sort of put an end to that for a while, and we've never really got back into it. We've concentrated on meat production to actually try and make a profit. Now I'm retired. Oh, she's got you a bit mucky now.
Oh, she has. That's all right, my darling.
Let's put this back in. Come on.
Go on, my darling. Come on. There you go. Come on. Next door for the chickens.
We've got to give a room to turn around. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on. There you go.
Do you feel a real connection with the dancing? It was all about, you know, celebrating harvest or, you know,
planting.
Yeah, yeah. Do you really get a sense of that as you're dancing?
I do, actually, because some of the dances are related to harvest, as you say. Some are related to actually planting. It sort of brings back memories of my grandfather, for instance, who was a folk singer. Without music, he could stand up and sing folk songs in front of any audience. Now, he worked on the land, and the sort of things that they sing about, he actually did, and my dad as well. And, yes, I do, I feel a connection.
Are there many other farmers or smallholders like yourself in the group?
No.
Because if people don't have that connection to the land, is it difficult for them to kind of express themselves through the dance?
David Hart has got two relations with both farmers, and he helps them. So, yes, he's got some connection with agriculture. Mm. Then there's myself. Others are much more sort of loosely linked, so it probably is more difficult for them.
Why do you think it is that Morris isn't really cherished?
It's sad, because I find people of my age are actually saying, oh, I hear Morris is dying out, can't wait till that happens, I wonder why, you know, the sooner the better. It's not necessarily youngsters who are saying that sort of thing. I think the main reason is it's not very explosive and it's not very dynamic, and it's tended to concentrate with older men now, whereas I think 100 years ago younger men were probably the main Morris dancers. It's related to probably drinking beer, carrying your pewter pot, which we never do, by the way, carrying your pewter pot on your belt.
It's, you know, a bit about the old...
You're set up to go out for a good evening's drinking.
Yes,
well,
you can't.
You can't do that and encourage the youngsters. If they're with you, you can't take them into a pub for, you know, a good few hours drinking and then not really be responsible enough to look after them. So ours is more of a family-orientated team, really, and I think that's why we managed to survive. There are lots of fathers and sons.
Right, lads, we'll just nip round. What's your name, first of all?
Max.
How old are you?
I'm 9.
Jonathan. And I'm 10.
OK, and what about you, little man? What's your name?
William.
How old are you, William?
6. No, 7.
Oh, 7 now. Oh, you've had a birthday since. How on earth did you start Morris dancing?
Until I was 4.
You started when you were 4. And of all of the dancers, which one's your favourite?
The stick stick dance.
The stick dance. How about you, my friend?
I don't know which is my favourite dance. I think it's back swords, right, which is a stick dance.
And are you part of the band as well, then?
Yeah, I play the whistle and the fiddle, which is violin.
I'm Noah, and I'm not 10.
And Noah, what about you? Because are you quite new to this, or...?
Well, I started 2 years ago, and the first thing I learnt was the steps, the pedal steps.
Yeah.
And from then, I just carried on.
I'm David, I'm 20. Yeah, I started when I was 4. William over there is actually my little brother. And, yeah, and I started because my dad started, so...
Right.
Always been brought up with it. Well, my favourite dance is Shepherd's Hay, just because it's loads of moves. It's awesome.
And I mean, it's lovely, isn't it, to get all the youngsters in here and just to sort of watch it and be part of it. In your sort of idea, is that the best way to learn, just to soak it up, is it?
Yeah, yeah, because, it's run through our family, because my granddad did it as well. It's just, when you start young, you just, like, even before you start dancing, you're just listening to the music and you just love it. And as soon as you're old enough to move your legs, you want to start dancing.
And do you get any hassle at school because of it?
Yes, a little bit, but you can live with it. It's not that bad. Yeah. I mean, I've never had that much trouble for my friends. I mean, the odd jib now and then, but nothing I couldn't cope with.
What do the sort of the handkerchiefs signify? Do you know?
I mean, some Morris historians will say that it's to do with sort of driving away evil spirits, but I think probably it's more to do with accentuating the hand movements of the dance, which in this dance isn't so much, because you keep your handkerchiefed hand, which is the left one, sticks to the right, behind your back, or behind your shoulder throughout the dance.
For the whole time? Right,
yeah,
okay.
Pretty much.
With kitchen hand we take great care, the clash of axles everywhere.
Over Hill to Scuttlebrook Square, till the maze they all cry mercy. Oh, are we on the spot now?
Yeah. Now for the stick, really.
Down. Are we going round now?
Spot. And then we go that way.
It doesn't half take your breath. It's good for fitness.
Very good. That was very good.
I loved it. Honestly, thank you.
No, that was good. That was actually very good.
Really enjoyed it.
No, it was picked that up very quickly, actually. Yeah. If you ever move to the area, give us a call.
Oh.
It's on a par with the Blue Peter Challenge. Open Country was presented by Matt Baker. The programme was produced by Sarah Swadling in Birmingham.